Mr. Smith, I believe you were going to call your next witness. Do you just have one more?
Just one more,
okay,
yes.
Okay, all right.
I'd like to call David Fite.
Good morning, Mr. Fike. If you could state your name for the record.
My name is David Fike.
And you swear to tell the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Fike, would you please introduce yourself?
My name is David Fike. I live at 22254 Port Gamble Road. Our property is immediately east of Indigo Topsoil.
And can you tell me a little bit about how long you've lived there?
We live there, probably 31 years right now. It's over 30 years.
And what do you do?
Well, I'm retired right now, but I retired out of the Puget Sound Naval Shipyard. The last 20 years, I was involved with technical codes, technical lead, and the last portion of my career, I was a supervisor of a group of engineers.
Great, thank you. Can you tell me why you appealed this SEPA determination?
Well, you wrap it all up, and I thought the SEPA determination was inadequate.
So what types of impacts do you experience?
Well, impacts related to the SEPA decision, they definitely have not mitigated the waste pile with a 10-foot setback. That's ridiculous. And with the setback of the waste pile, it's not only you're talking about dust, you're also talking about noise. It's extremely noisy. His excavator, the power plant probably is okay, but the linkages are really sloppy. And when he gets to beating and pulverizing that pile or lifting and shaking, it is extremely noisy. I also noticed that in the original CUP, the lighting impacts are much stricter than, well, the SEPA decision didn't really address the lighting, but the staff report did. And basically what the staff report says, we're going to do it per the code. I could tell you the code if I looked it up, but there is a difference between the original CUP and the DCD staff report. And as far as, can you still hear me? Okay. As far as the traffic goes, I was really, really interested in reading a traffic impact statement or analysis. I was a little disappointed in not seeing an analysis. And the reason I was so interested in this traffic analysis is because I don't see how they could possibly come up with a positive looking, forward-looking, something that's even acceptable at this location. It is a habitual speeding area. It is dangerous to get my mail. And people speed when the big trucks turn, go in, come out. They take up the whole road. You constantly have vehicles stacked up 4 and 5 long. I am waiting for the day that I either get hit at my mailbox or there be a rear-end collision. It's just ripe and ready to be picked. It's going to happen. The dirt and dust impacts, the yard waste pile operation is very dusty. The operation of the skid steer with the brush attachment. I've seen where his help down there dry sweeping. You can hear this sweeper when they got it cranked up and really moving. You have a plume of dust that's easily 100 feet high. And I'm basing that as looking over the horizon and gauging from mature Douglas fir trees. I'm not just guessing here. You can tell how high that plume goes. It's all over the place. The trucks, in the first part of May, we had a dry spell. This dry spell dried out everything down there, even on our properties. And in the afternoon, as I was walking down to get my mail, he had two of his rigs come in. And I just shake my head and laugh to see how much dust is in the air. It's just amazing. It's just a complete cloud of dust. And it just covers the whole yard, and it, depending on which way the wind is blowing, the wind could be a south wind, it could be a north wind, we can get a west, northwest, you name it. That dust is moving. And, you know, I just think there needs to be something done about it.
Thank you. Can you tell me a little bit about how you access your property?
We access our property on the north side easement of Indigo. And there's two easements on that side. There's one 30-foot for our easement, and then there's another 30-foot that services the properties north. So.
Okay. And are you familiar with the SEPA mitigated determination of non-significance?
Yes, I've read it a few times.
Okay. Can you tell me what it said about the yard debris pile and the setbacks related to the yard debris pile?
Okay, the setbacks said 10 foot from lot lines. And the first thing that came to mind was a little chuckle. I go, this is amazing. If we set that waste pile 10 foot from a lot line, we're going to be seeing it right in the middle of our easement. Now, maybe that was an error. I don't know. Maybe whoever put that together might have been in a rush. I don't know. But really, where it sits is approximately 10 foot from the south side of the easement line. So, I mean, if you were to say that a lot line is equivalent to the south side of the easement line, I guess, okay, but that's not what it says.
Okay, and can you tell me, do you think there are impacts related to the yard debris pile being set back 10 feet from the south end of the easement?
Oh, yeah, there is. I walk every day to check our mail, usually in the afternoon. And when I'm walking down our driveway before I step onto the easement road, I usually look down and I can see the excavator operation, what truck's being loaded, seeing what they're doing, if they're, you know, they're lifting, pounding, pulverizing, you name it. I make a decision right there whether I'm going to go get my mail or I'm just going to go back to the house and wait for an hour. I don't want to walk next to this operation when it's dusty or when they're pounding and pulverizing, because it's going to end up being a safety issue. There's going to be something flying out. We've already seen some debris on the easement road. It's just a matter of time. 10-foot setback is not good enough. And I'll expand a little bit on that. And this is from my work career in the shipyard. I have been involved with job safety committees, job safety analysis, and been around industrial equipment my entire working career, which is about 32 years there. I'll just put it into an example. You would never let an individual in that envelope, if the envelope was going to be the easement road, in other words, you have a 10-foot setback, you would never allow personnel in that envelope without wearing the proper personnel protection equipment. You just wouldn't. They also say the 10-foot setback can be anywhere on that property, any lot line. If that waste pile ends up on the east side, our property line at 10 feet away from our property line, that's going to render my property unusable in a 50-foot radius because I would never let my grandkids play anywhere near there. So I don't see where they're coming up with this 10-foot setback. All my work experiences around industrial environments, shipyard overhaul, it just doesn't pass the test.
And so how would you mitigate the impacts?
Well, you mitigate something like this by increasing distance, increasing buffer, putting up a border or some type of physical boundary, or you modify the procedure, or you eliminate the procedure. You've got several options here. If the process cannot be modified, in other words, it's a process that you cannot change because of certain reasons, then you have to increase the buffers. Those are just basic safety rules that you apply to a situation like this.
Thank you. You also mentioned some noise impacts earlier. Can you expand on that?
Well, the noise impacts from the yard waste pile is, I had to chuckle. It was just earlier this week. I was on the east side of our property, and I was probably working on one of my tractors. And I was hearing that excavator, and they were just going to town, beating and pulverizing, lifting, shaking, and loading, and pounding the waste inside the dump trucks. It was just as loud as when the soil screen was there. There's no difference. It's noisy. It's not quiet. And one other thing that's really amazing, if I was on the easement road walking down there with a friend or my wife while they were doing this operation, there you would never be able to have a conversation with anybody. It's that loud. So I think it is pertinent. The operation is not quiet at all.
You mentioned the soil screening equipment.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the soil? There was mitigation related to the soil screening equipment, correct?
Yeah. From what I've read from the customer response letter and the, I don't know if it was the SEPA appeal or the staff report, the applicant has agreed to move this screen to his Hansville site on Commercial Avenue. And there's one thing I would like to mention about a topsoil screen. There are some inaccuracies in the original CUP and some inaccuracies in this current application. They tend to confuse the screen's function with a soil mixing machine. Soil screens do not mix soil. I just want to make that clear, because when I look at that, I just shake my head, because it just shows whoever's writing the paper doesn't know what they're talking about. So you don't mix soil in a screen. So I'm glad that the screen is gone. I think it's a plus. But there is a difference between the screen. The screen was always under the green cover when Emu topsoil was there. So it was somewhat muffled. The noise was basically was directed towards Port Gamble.
And what do you think could be done to mitigate some of the noise impacts
on the yard waste pile?
On the yard waste pile, or I guess, are there other noise impacts related to the?
Oh, absolutely. We're still hearing the loading and redropping of the rock into the dump trucks. They don't do it all the time, but we still hear it. And another thing, too, is the CEPA decision says 8-inch or larger rocks will be located on the road front and will be only loaded by hand. Well, it's good if you follow process, but they're not always following process. If you've ever been next to a dump truck or a loader when they have dumped this stuff into an empty dump truck, it will hurt you as far as pain in the ears. And that noise travels up to our house readily. It doesn't matter where this operation takes place. It could take place in the front office, it could take back office. It doesn't matter. When they drop this rock into a dump truck, we hear it in our yard. It hurts your ears. We hear it in the house. All our windows are closed up on the east side of, on the west side of our house. It's so even though they say that they've mitigated this through some special handling procedure, that's fine, but who's gonna babysit this and make sure it gets done? Because we're still hearing it today. I mean, I was talking with a neighbor the other day, and he goes, "What the heck is that?" I says, "Oh, they just dropped a bunch of large rock in a dump truck." And he goes, "You're kidding." "No." So
what do you think could be done to mitigate some of that noise?
Well, it goes back to basically the same thing I just said. You change the process or eliminate the process. Mm-hmm. So, I don't think they have a very good track record of following their process. So my take is maybe they should remove it.
You mentioned some traffic impacts as well when you first started discussing. Will you elaborate a little bit on the traffic impacts that you experienced?
Well, one of the serious things is there's a couple of them, but the first thing that we have is we have the Port Gamble-Gunderson intersection problem. It is absolutely a traffic accident nightmare down there. A lot of the people that come up to this intersection are confused about the rules of the road, and then they get flustered because they have to wait. But when the large trucks and trailers come and go, they take up all the lanes and part of the shoulders, and that also adds to the problem, because as these large trucks and trailers make this turn, it requires the intersection to be cleared. So as they're holding back a good 50 feet from the intersection, waiting to try and see if they got a window to push their truck through, that creates a little bit of frustration from impatient drivers. And it's not a good thing. Now, as far as in front of Indigo Topsoil, it is an habitual speeding area. The speed zone is 35, but I would say that people average, the speeders average over 50 there. And it's actually kind of frightening to get your mail at times, because you can't stand in front of your mailbox. You actually have to stand to the side and in back to make sure you have an escape route in case somebody is distracted and hits the no shoulder area. There's no shoulders on Port Gamble Road, by the way. There's just, you got the white line, some people call it the fog line, and then you got maybe an inch of pavement, and then you got gravel. And so that, along with the speeding issue, is creating a problem in front of Indigo Topsoil. Often I will go down to the mail, and as I'm walking down, probably about 400 feet away from the road, as I'm watching, I have this little window in front of our mailbox, this little view window, and I'm watching. I'm watching and also hearing a truck leave Indigo, and I'm going, okay, is this going to be the time? Because as I'm watching these cars, they're traveling south. As I'm watching these cars travel south, they all got their brakes on pretty heavy, And I'm just waiting. I'm just waiting for somebody to get pounded there. Again, it's because the trucks, the large trucks and trailers and semis that come and go out of Indigo take up the entire road. It doesn't, it requires traffic. It screws up traffic on both northbound and southbound routes. So.
And are you aware of any traffic mitigation that's been proposed for this project?
No, there's been none. I was really disappointed, again, in not seeing a traffic analysis, because I was really interested in seeing just how somebody could paint a good picture on this. And you just can't.
Okay. Do you know if there's been any review of the traffic impacts at all?
No, there hasn't been any that I'm aware of, other than the fact that they did a simple kick and count of customers sometime in April. That's not a comprehensive study. It doesn't show anything. It doesn't prove anything. It just, it's a simple kick and count. Well, you can't draw any conclusions from a simple kick and count, period.
And do you recall what that count was?
No, I really don't. I didn't retain that information because I didn't think it was necessary, but it was a simple kick and count.
Okay. And so do you think any of the traffic impacts have changed at all since the original proposal?
Has any of the traffic impacts changed from the original proposal?
Yeah. So there have been some modifications of the application along
the way. Oh, okay. Well, this is something that I found kind of it made me smirk when I read the SEPA appeal response. When the SEPA's response made the statement that the traffic impact analysis, I can't do this word for word, but the traffic impact analysis was determined not required by Public Works. And one of the justifications was that the applicant changed or modified his application to accommodate something or another, but that's an untrue statement, flat out false. The original application project narrative stated that they were going to eliminate the north access of the property. So when did they change it? They didn't change it from the original application, so it's a false statement. I just don't understand how he can even make that statement. It's just blatantly false.
Let's move on a little bit to dust impacts that you've mentioned. What type of dust impacts do you experience?
Well, in getting the mail, as I'm stepping out onto the easement road and I'm watching the excavator is doing the yard waste pile and they're beating and pulverizing and shaking, creating a large dust plume, I just turn around and go back to the house because, you know, I really don't want to walk next to a dusty operation. So that's one impact. The other impact, generally overall, you know, the trucks, the loaders, the bobcat with the sweeper and whatnot, there are times when the dust is heavy and it's over the entire operation, and it migrates up to our house. There's no way that you could ever put a clothesline out to dry your clothes at our house. We're constantly washing the picnic table and the garden benches, and, you know, even before you sit down and try to relax in your yard. The dust has a way of migrating. It also migrates on our windows and collects on the little sill that's there. And so it does impact. It does have an impact on us.
And are you aware of any conditions or mitigation for dust
in the,
on this project?
There is nothing in this application that is, there's no proposal in there to invoke or mandate a plan. It just says, hey, we're going to buy a water truck. Okay, I can buy a water truck too. Doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to use it. So I'm not used to seeing something like this from my work career. You don't just buy a piece of equipment. You're going to say, I bought a water truck. I'm going to employ it under these conditions, X, Y, Z, A, B, C, whatever. There's nothing in this application that says this. They do mention BMP C 140, I believe. Well, many months ago, I looked that up just to see what it was. And it's a dust control, basically spraying water. There is other things in there, but spraying water on the site. But it's for temporary construction jobs. It is not for a operation. And so, yeah, that's what it is.
Okay. And do you think, is there anything you would suggest related to mitigation surrounding dust? How those impacts would be mitigated?
Well, there's different ways you can mitigate dust. You can change the operation. You can change the equipment. In other words, smaller equipment. You can employ a dust mitigation plan. Not just say you're going to have to buy a water truck. That doesn't cut it. There's no obligation by the for the applicant to even use the water truck. There's nothing in there that says that. There's nothing in there at all that says he will use that water truck. Now, I have seen the person that works down there spraying a garden hose, which is good, but you're never going to spray enough water on that lot to keep the dust down. By the time you move to one section or another, the other section is going to dry up. You'll never be able to keep the lot wet enough with a garden hose.
And you also mentioned some issues with the lighting conditions.
Well, the lighting conditions, like I said, the original CUP makes the statement, no exterior artificial lighting. And so, okay, Ron abided by that. Now we get to the major revision here, and DCD and CEPA, actually it's DCD, the staff report, states that, hey, we're going to do it per county code. I can't quote that without looking it up, but basically it says, something about a one candle foot power. I don't know if it's one, but anyways, it's pretty low. May leave the property, and lighting is for security only. But it doesn't say in the county code that it can't. The county code does not prohibit him from putting in any work operation lighting down there. There's nothing in there that says that he can't do that. So if he was to put in or add lighting on that site, well, I don't know. It kind of looks like that belongs in an area that's truly zoned for a commercial activity. It's not rural. That's not a rural characteristic.
Thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, I know there probably is.
I think you've covered it.
I think I actually covered most of what I had to say. Yeah, I'm pretty good with what I said. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. No further questions.
Is there any cross-examination?
Couple questions, Your Honor. Thank you. Mr. Fite, can you see the Port Gamble Gunderson intersection from your house?
No.
So your testimony today that it's a significant problem comes from where? I mean, what?
It comes from personal observation, driving a vehicle and or walking down Port Gamble Road.
Okay. So then is it your testimony that Indigo topsoil is solely responsible for the problems at that intersection?
No, it adds to the problem. Okay. It's in addition to.
Have you personally had experiences at the intersection where there's been an accident related to an Indigo topsoil vehicle?
No.
Your testimony regarding your concerns from speeders, I want to be clear, those aren't Indigo topsoil vehicles that are speeding. Is that correct?
I have not seen any of Indigo topsoil vehicles speed.
So the concerns you have regarding the speeding on Port Gamble Road is the concern that someone speeding may hit a truck turning into the topsoil site. Is that correct?
Not totally.
Can you explain that for me, please?
When you have trucks making a turn into Indigo topsoil, it creates a backup of vehicles both northbound and southbound.
Okay.
It isn't a concern that a vehicle, it's more of a concern for the other vehicles being rear-ended by somebody coming up from behind.
Okay.
I mean, if somebody rear-ends a truck, well, the truck's gonna survive and the car isn't. So, you know, the concern isn't for Indigo. The concern is a public concern. It's also an individual concern. We drive that road practically every day.
Okay. But you haven't had any personal experiences with your own safety being at risk?
I have not had any personal accidents on Port Gamble.
So it's more of a... I've
had an accident on Gunderson. That was quite a few years ago. But that wasn't... had nothing to do with this.
So it's more of a general concern.
No, I don't think, I'm not going to say it's a general concern. I'm going to say it's a major concern.
Okay.
Okay?
All right. I want to be clear, you talked a lot about hearing the noise from the site. That's only during hours of operation, is that correct?
Yes.
One of the mitigations that you suggested was establishing a physical boundary between your property and Indigo topsoil. Is that correct?
Are you talking about my testimony here?
Yes.
Are you talking about my letters that I've submitted?
Your testimony here today. You referenced a physical boundary as a...
Okay. If wherever that yard waste pile is going to sit, I'm also suggesting there be a physical barrier.
Okay.
So I don't know. Right now it's next to the easement road, 10 foot from the easement road.
Isn't there a fence between the...
Okay. So here what we got is a 6 foot
fence. Just
fence.
Answer my question. Yes, sure. Yes or no? Is there a fence?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. You talked a lot about your safety concerns. Are you a safety expert? Is that your background or history in the safety industry?
No, I worked on...
That's just yes or no. Have you had any experience regarding safety on retail nursery sites?
No.
Okay. Is it your testimony that you've never observed the water truck on site?
That is correct.
You do recall the soil screener, though, being there when Emu Topsoil was operating. Is that correct?
Yes.
And your testimony is that it was significantly loud. Is that correct?
No, that was not my testimony here today.
I
said that the excavator, operating the excavator when I'm on the east side of our property, the excavator operation was louder than the topsoil screening that Emu was doing.
When it was on the east side of their property, is that correct?
When I was on the east side, when I was physically on the east side of my property.
Okay. I guess I'm still confused.
Okay.
So The east side of your property is the furthest away from the topsoil operation. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So your testimony is that the excavator, when it's operating, is louder than the soil screener was?
Yes, when compared to the EMU topsoil operation.
Was that prior to the excavator being exchanged for a smaller, quieter excavator?
I can't answer that. I don't know. I didn't pay attention to which model excavator they had on site. Okay.
I don't think I have any other questions.
Anything from the county? Okay. Anything further?
I think that you wanted to speak a little bit more to the 6-foot fence that's between the access easement and the debris.
Oh, absolutely. I would like to.
Will you expand on that a little bit?
Okay. When you're standing on the easement road next to this excavator operation for the yard waste pile, you have a 6-foot fence and you have an 8-foot height of eco blocks. The yard waste pile is states in the paperwork that I think it's 14 or 14 and a half foot pile. The fence doesn't do anything for the risk of, it doesn't mitigate anything. Because you have a large excavator, it picks up the waste, it goes much higher than 14 feet, picks it up, lifts it up, shakes it. So there is no real physical boundary for a lot of this operation. And so that's what I wanted to say. I just wanted to say that you have a 6-foot fence, you have 8-foot height of eco blocks, and then you have a 14-foot height of yard waste. So there is no physical barrier right now. So that's what I wanted to say.
Great, thank you.
Anything further? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Pike. You are dismissed. So at this point, we could take a lunch break. No? Yes? Oh, wait. You've got so do you what? How much how time do you all need to present?
We just need about our staff needs about 10 minutes.
Oh, okay.
And then I expect I will just ask the applicant a few questions to address some of the concerns that we've heard.
Okay.
I also have, I'd like to hear from you. I'm not exactly sure. The SEPA appeal did not include any issues related to stormwater.
Correct. That's my understanding.
And so they discussed it, but I don't feel the need to address those issues. I don't believe you have jurisdiction.
I believe that all the parties have agreed that the stormwater issues are not a SEPA issue.
Okay.
A SEPA appeal issue.
Then it'll just be a few questions for the applicant.
Okay. Well, then it seems to me it makes sense to just go ahead and proceed and wrap this up. Mr. Smith, any objection to that? Ms. Walston, you okay over there? Do we need to take a short break? Anybody need a short break to address anything before we keep trucking? Okay, we will go ahead and proceed. You all may call your first witness. With the county going first, I assume, because you're, okay.
So Steve Peacock for the county.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Could you state your name for the record?
Yes, Steve Peacock, and I'm the SEPA coordinator for the county.
You swear to tell the truth under penalty of perjury
under
the laws of the state of Washington?
I do. Thank you. Let's see. Just for the record, I did prepare the SEPA response, the SEPA appeal response, and then, of course, it was reviewed by our legal division. With Laura here. I typically, as a practice, our environmental reviewers are the of a specific project are the ones who write the specific SEPA determination, and then we review that internally. So we have a review procedure that we have for that as well. So when there's a mitigated determination or just a straight determination of non-significance, then we address those particular items and just make sure that before it goes out and ships out, that we feel we've adequately addressed the particular situation, whatever the conditional use, whether it's conditional use permit, site development activity permit, or what have you. So so that's our internal process. So that did occur here as well. And our SEPA official is my boss, which is Scott Diener. He's the actual SEPA official for the county. But our role is to review that. I've been doing the SEPA review here for the county for about 11 years now, roughly, for all sorts of projects. So just so you know that as well. Some of the sentient points, obviously, I think that everyone has read our SEPA appeal recommendation to you. And, you know, some of the items that I think that might be sentient here to the particular situation is in relation to our conclusion. So, again, we have reviewed the application. The particular appeal really had 4 points. I don't recall anything talking about buffers in specific. We do have mitigation that's in place for the project, but I don't think that we really had a condition raised about the buffer itself, whether or not somebody had decided that 10 feet was an adequate buffer. But we do have functional screening that's in place for visual impacts. And that's typically how we address an operation like this. I'd also like to state that I am actually very familiar with the EMU topsoil operation, as prior to working for Kitsap County, I worked for the Kitsap Conservation District. And so I'm very familiar with the product that created. I would imagine that was excessively impactive to anyone living around there. It was very smelly. I think you have some neighbors that were here at that time that have provided testimony for you. I can again provide testimony that that was not a very tidy operation. And that's just the fact of the matter. So the back to the specifics, I don't think we're looking at buffer problems, but I do think that we have created a mitigated determination of non-significance, saying that we are going to have visual best management practices so that we do not impact the neighbor, the applicant. Does have a dust management, the ability to do dust management on the project, and typically at the point of a site development activity permit, and then further review in a conditional use permit in a back and forth, we would also discuss best management practices to make sure dust doesn't leave a site. So I don't think dust really is a point of concern. We've again addressed that. And then in the conclusions portion, oh, this is really beeping, that's horrible. In the conclusions, we really talk about, and I wrote talking about SEPA determination for significance, that when we write a determination for significance of adverse environmental impacts, that significant is defined as likely to have more than a moderate adverse impact on the environment. And those environment components obviously are noise, light, glare, those kinds of things that we typically mitigate as nuisance types of features from an operation. So we identified impacts including aesthetics, noise, storm drainage, dust and odor that are reduced to a moderate level. And we do believe that we've met that that standard. Further, the SEPA official determined that the MDNS would reduce likely adverse impacts to a moderate level. SEPA does not require that all adverse impacts are eliminated, but rather seeks a balance. And then we further cite the Marantha mining versus Pierce County. There's a citing there for that from 1990. The responsible official is entitled to substantial weight in such decision making. That was from that case. Further, the same case informs that community displeasure cannot be the basis of a permit denial. And then I'd further explain that this particular permit is a revision to an existing permit that never had an appeal, nor were there any concerns raised. We did not have any concerns from that particular land use decision back in 1997, I believe. But Mr. Jeff Smith can talk about that further in the conditional use permit. So we did not have an appeal. There were no outside conditions, if you will. We look at light, I believe, we look at light the same way. Light impacts are one candle power leaving the property. So that would be at the property corner between any neighbor. So that would be at all property corners from the site to a neighbor, one candle power. And it's not, you know, it's an impact that we've had in place ever since I've been here. So that numeric, if you will, is in Title 10. I'll leave it for at the end here that the SEPA official provided a response to the comments within the April 17th decision, stating that the comments will be addressed in the staff report as conditions under existing regulations. The official responded that many of the concerns are also addressed through the conditions and mitigation requirements of the determination. We couldn't understand, and I did not take the phone call directly, but when the applicant's legal had first contacted Ms. Kathleen Barnhart, who's the person who actually wrote our MDNS. They did not ask anything specific about, hey, are you adequately addressing these particular items? No, it was more so, hey, what is the SEPA methodology for appealing? They went directly to appeal without any communication about the specifics of the MDNS itself, whether we felt that the conditional use permit would have, you know, further constraints and that type of thing. So it was kind of unusual. I've had dealt with SEPA appeals in the past, and there's always been a discussion about, well, are you going to do this or that or whatever. That did not happen. As spelled out in the SEPA MDNS, all of the specific points raised as concerns were written as conditions of approval and mitigation requirements and are specifically addressed in the MDNS. And then our recommendation, of course, is that based on the above analysis, staff recommends the SEPA appeal be denied. And then that was signed by Scott Diener, who is obviously our division manager, and again, he's the SEPA official for the county.
Any cross-examination? Are there any further questions for him? I guess I should just confirm that with the county. Okay. Then, Mr. Smith, any questions?
Just a couple. Mr. Heacock, were you here for the testimony that was presented?
Yes, I was.
Mm-hmm. And so, can you? I'm going to take you through. And are you able to testify to Mr. Diener's? Do we know if Mr. Diener is going to be testifying today?
No.
Okay.
If you're referring, which document?
The SEPA response. Are you comfortable? You're comfortable.
I wrote the SEPA response.
And okay, it was just signed.
It was reviewed.
Okay.
Yes.
Wonderful. So based on you reached the conclusion that the impacts here are moderate impacts, correct? Mm-hmm. They're not. It's not that there are no impacts.
Correct.
It's that the impacts are moderate.
There are impacts.
Okay.
Less than moderate.
Great. Thank you. When we talk about the yard debris pile being set back 10 feet from lot lines, mm-hmm. Yes. what's your interpretation that is 10 feet from the property boundary?
I believe it would be from the point of the access road in that particular spot. I believe that was the understanding by Ms. Barnhart when she wrote that decision about the 10 feet from, obviously, from the roadway. The property line is obviously on the other side of the roadway itself.
Okay.
So I think there's an easement. Yeah, right.
Yeah. And are you aware that lot line is defined in the Kitsap County Code?
I don't know the detail of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. And so would you agree that if it were 10 feet from the lot line that it would be a significant impact?
I would not. And in fact, with a fence,
let me clarify.
Block wall and all those things that are in place, plus vegetation, that if there's vegetation planted, that's going to adequately grow as well. That will buffer a lot of noise and a lot of light. I don't know how light's going to go through 2.5 feet of concrete, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Let me clarify. If it were 10 feet from the property boundary, would that create a significant impact?
Well, it would be in the middle of the road then, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
So would that be a significant impact if it were in the middle of the road?
It would be in the middle of the road. I don't think that was the intent of Ms. Barnhart. I think that seems to be a Schribner error, if you call it anything, in relation to an MDNS. The intent is that we have a 10-foot buffer. I believe the 10-foot buffer is already in place. I have been to the site. I've walked the site. There's a fairly significant block wall that's there that surrounds where this vegetation is in place. And I don't believe the existing operation has had, maybe it has when it first started, but that application has changed significantly since its first iteration. And of course, obviously, our co-compliance division was there as well because we were getting complaints about it. So the applicant, upon hearing that, came in and then started discussions about, hey, we're changing an existing operation, and what do we need to do to comply? We told them, obviously, to go through this permit review system, right? And as I've seen, this operation has complied with everything that we've asked them to do. The county has asked them to do certain things to alleviate neighbor concerns, and they've done every single one of them. So we've had situations where we have applications that where the applicant chooses not to do certain things or provides a lot of background noise about, well, I don't think I need to do that. But in this case, this applicant has done everything we've asked them to do with the county in relation to the code compliance case. To get into it a little further, again, we're not talking about buffers. We're talking about noise impacts and addressing your concern about noise impacts. We also had made a statement that is further in the SEPA decision about noise and how we're going to look at noise for this particular operation. That will be examined. It will be required to have a noise study. Those kinds of things are going to happen. We're requiring it. It's in the MDNS. So these are conditions placed upon the applicant to do these kinds of activities. But I hope I answered that.
And more.
Okay.
let me see if I can come back to this. So So I'm going to take you to something that you just mentioned related to buffers. And are you aware of the Kitsap County Code and how it deals with buffers for topsoil?
We're not looking at buffers in this application. There's nothing that you specified in the appeal that talked about we don't think the buffers are big enough. So I don't know how I can address that. We're addressing noise. We're addressing light impacts. We're addressing dust. And I think that our appeal has provided a little bit more of an expansion of how we're going to be reviewing that. And further, I think in our conclusions, we've wrapped up what we feel we've done in relation to the MDNS to mitigate for impacts for this particular project.
Well, you've mentioned that you use buffers to mitigate impacts,
sure.
Correct?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So when we talk about dust mitigation, you note that a water truck has been purchased to aid in the reduction of dust, correct?
Sure, yes.
But are there any requirements at all in the SEPA determination that would mitigate any dust impacts?
Well, we have the citing about 17500 where we're talking about protection of rural enjoyment, that type of thing. Dust obviously would be a concern from an operation. We would assume that there would be dust control. And that would likely occur at time of the site development activity permit. We would actually have a dust abatement plan for an operation of this size, if you will. And you know, with concerns raised, I would imagine that we will be looking at a dust abatement plan as part of the SDAP. So. I shouldn't abbreviate site development activity permit. So further conditions are often placed on an applicant. Once we go through review of the actual conditional use permit with the concerns raised by the public, and aside from a SEPA appeal, if the public raised concerns about an operation with dust as a concern, we would likely say you will have a dust management plan. And that will be in place. And who's going to be the ones, the interesting thing about Kitsap County is that we don't have people driving around looking for dust plumes. However, if something's been raised and there's a conditional use permit and that is a component of the conditions placed on the applicant, then they will abide by that. And if there's observations from the public that there is a dust problem, then that will be part of the record, and then they have recourse to talk to code compliance and say, hey, this operation is out of compliance.
And so for a site development activity permit, mm-hmm. Are those conditions related to the site development activity permit generally related to the site development itself?
Well, often, yes, but also the operation itself.
And the
too.
Continued operation.
Sure.
And
yes.
So is this operation going on currently?
I believe so, yeah, right.
Okay, so before any site development activity.
Yeah, because it's, you know, I don't know the specifics of how code compliance had interacted, because we're actually not in the loop with code compliance. We specifically in code compliance are not allowed to know anything about any anyone complaining about a project. We don't know. I obviously now know, we've got neighbors that have raised concerns, but we are not told by our code compliance division how anything is transpiring in relation to a conditional use permit or the existing operation, if you will. I will say that often what will happen in an operation, if someone takes over something that was previously approved, code compliance works directly with the applicant to get them to conform to specific complaints. And the fact is that code compliance typically allows the operation to continue with the understanding that through the conditional use permit, revised conditional use permit or what have you, that, you know, specifically I can point to several wedding venues that require conditional use permits where they're allowed to continue that particular operation. They may have clients that are already in place, you know, things like that. So our code compliance division takes it on a site-specific and case-by-case basis. Yeah.
And so does CEPA require you to address air impact issues?
Air impact in relation to CEPA can typically be in relation to the Puget Sound Clean Air Agency. Once there's a site development activity permit that's in place, then Department of Ecology typically reviews that application. If Ecology determines there's, you know, additional mitigation measures that are done at time of site development activity permit, that typically is brought in at time of site development activity permit.
And so in the CEPA checklist.
The checklist, uh-huh, about the temporary, yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So in the checklist, when the
applicant applied for the application, uh-huh.
When the applicant applied for the application, addressed
temporary dust control.
Temporary dust control. Uh-huh. Yeah. And so there were no so the applicant stated that there was impacts from dust.
Just in that discussion right now and say that I do not believe that the applicant will have a problem controlling dust, that once we have the conditional use hearing itself, I have absolutely no problem requiring dust control in this particular situation. And by it being omitted in a CEPA MDNS does not mean that it will not be mitigated if it's something that's a concern that's been brought up.
Sure. But currently, right now, it's not mitigated.
It's not in the decision.
Right. Mm-hmm. And when the application was originally submitted, there was a request that a traffic study was performed.
Uh-huh.
Was a traffic study ever performed?
The traffic study was asked for when the applicant wanted to continue to do soil production on the property. And when you do soil production, there's an awful lot more trucks, more equipment, shakers, screens, creating topsoil products through all those means, and with often with really big heavy machinery. The existing EMU operation was extremely noisy. I've been on that operation.
I'm sorry, I'm asking about traffic.
So in relation to the traffic, since there are less big heavy trucks going in and out of the property, and as I understand from our public works department, they had reviewed the revised application when the applicant had made a statement that they were no longer going to do soil production on the property, that they did not then require a traffic impact analysis. And further, that the Public Works Department had never made a condition for the traffic study. They felt that the traffic itself on this particular roadway and this road system, that the operation was not going to be beyond the threshold to need a traffic impact analysis. Now, I'm not the traffic engineer of the county, so I cannot provide you with that. I just know that in this conditional use permit, a TIA was determined not to be necessary for the operation.
In your experience, are administrative conditional use permits generally?
Yes.
Do they generally tend to be more restrictive?
Administrative conditional use?
Yeah, administrative. So if this was a hearing examiner conditional use permit, would you generally say that administrative conditional use permits need more information or less information?
I didn't think this was an administrative
permit.
I don't understand the question.
Sure. I guess I'm asking related to whether or not
I'll tell you that an administrative conditional use permit has the same detail provided or asked for, if you will. Just depends on the land use designation, the actual project, the detail of the project. Again, that's based on county code, but that's not the case here.
Well, county code here, if it were an administrative conditional use permit, would require a traffic impact study. And this is a hearing examiner conditional use permit, does not have the same requirement, but was
we often have applications that come in where we ask for a particular study to be provided. If they can provide detail that they don't need that particular study, then it's waived and we don't need it.
Sure. And so are you
just
aware
like
of
a project that's below the threshold for even needing a SEPA determination, we can waive those if they are below the threshold of needing a SEPA decision. We still require the checklist.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I don't want to belabor the point here. But are you aware that the traffic impact assessment was asked for multiple times in this process?
I was not the planner in this project, so I'm not aware of all of the details of that.
Okay.
It seemed to be the case.
Yeah. And the I believe that in this response, as Mr. Fike testified to, there was a discussion related to that the traffic impact analysis was no longer required because the easement access road was no longer used.
It was not about the access road, I don't believe, because that was always part of the application, as I understood, that it was about the operation not being a soil production operation any longer.
Sure.
That's what it was about.
Okay. And so the decision not to require a traffic impact analysis came down to
from Public Works, and that's my understanding.
Specifically related to the fact that there was no screening, but there was no soil production operation.
Uh-huh.
But there was, in your understanding, was there any discussion related to the traffic that's generated from soil?
I don't know.
Okay. Thank you. I've got no further questions.
Okay, thank you.
I
Actually, I had a clarification, Mr. You had said, so this is in the record as well, that it's no longer a soil production operation, and so that sounds like what I heard you say, reduced impacts from the prior EMU operation with respect to perhaps noise and dust. Did I hear you correctly on that?
I think that's pretty clear that the a topsoil production operation is extremely dusty. And so when that particular operation has a screen, they're screening materials with a different sieve, if you will, to get different products to fall out. So they may screen to get, you know, coarser particles, that they pull those coarser particles off so that they are used for bark dust or what have you. But that the screened material down below then is then remixed as a soil product, you know, whether it's called a three-way or, you know, we've got all sorts of different kinds of product, if you will. But the functional operation of a screen operation or doing any kind of soil production is very, very dusty. And this particular previous operation had agreements with every single horse facility within Kitsap, well, within Central and North Kitsap County, and everybody took their stuff there because initially they did not charge for it. They were creating a product. You could bring your material there in your little small 5-yard dump truck. Most of the farms had set up a 5-yard dump truck that they would bring the stall waste. So it wasn't just manure, but it was also the, you know, straw or mulch materials or that type of thing that was mixed with the horse manure and then brought onto this facility. And then this facility then ground that material up and then mixed some of the emu poo in with that. It's an official word, poo. But that the operation itself was primarily horse manure that was brought in from other places around the whole county.
So in some ways, the revised CUP reduces the scope of the original proposal?
Yes, we believe so. Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Can clarify that?
Can I ask a clarifying question as well? It's my understanding that the applicant is still reserving the ability to produce topsoil on the site. Is that no longer the case? I believe that was in one of the...
Well, that might be a question for the conditional use permit. At this point, we're just talking about the CUP.
Sure,
deal,
sure.
So. Did that answer your question?
Yes,
sorry.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, right.
Anything further, the county or the applicant?
Your Honor, My client just wishes to rely on his earlier testimony that he agrees and acknowledges the condition, agrees with and acknowledges the recommendations and conditions that set forth in the MDNS and the staff report relating to
the CUP.
Yep.
And just to clarify, the condition for topsoil producing, I believe, is in the proposed CUP conditions. So the answer is no, there will be no.
That was my understanding. All right. Anything further? Redirect? Are you? Nope. Okay, Mr. Heacock, you are dismissed.
Thank you.
All right. Did you have any further witnesses, Ms. Zippel?
No further witnesses.
Oh, okay. All right, Mr. Bagwell, did you wish to call anyone?
I don't, Your Honor. Like I said, based on the client's earlier testimony, they acknowledge and agree to comply with the conditions and recommendations of the MDNS and the staff report
okay.
to address any of the concerns that have been discussed.
Okay. Questions. So in terms of the records, so there are some SEPA materials that were filed, but there are also documents in the CUP record that have some relevance to the SEPA appeal issues. So I assume that I can look to both in assessing SEPA issues. Is that kind of the understanding of council?
No objection from the applicant.
Is that?
Yeah, no, I think that probably would be helpful.
Okay, is it not all the CUP materials have relevant? There's, but
well,
there is some crossover.
There are varying standards related to impacts, both in the, that differ in the CUP and the SEPA. So.
And then I had a question about the SEPA lens, because there was a SEPA that was an MD&S, I believe, that was issued on in 97 or, you know, right about the time period for the original operation. And then there was the MD&S that's under appeal here. So in considering impacts, do you look at the scope of the impacts that go beyond that original MD&S, because that wasn't appealed and that was what addressed associated? I mean, there's just a question in my mind, and I don't know if that's a question that council wanted to have any thoughts on in terms of the lens for looking at the SEPA review.
I'm not sure I fully, so are you asking that in terms of?
I'm looking at kind of background conditions. So there is, you have the background conditions where this is the EMU operation. CUP was issued for it. SEPA was issued for it. And then you have a revised permit, and that changes the scope of the particular use. And so the MD&S is on that. So the, in terms of assessing impacts, you're looking at, I guess, how what the change is.
Right.
You're not going kind of back to square one, but you're looking at the change. Is my kind
and
of...
And that's why we included the original SEPA MD&S and checklist in the SEPA materials. Because it is, you know, it's the revision to the original CUP. And that's, I think, goes back to Mr. Hecox's point that that this is a, you know, in some ways a reduction of a lot of these impacts that were done through the topsoil production.
Okay. Mr. Smith, any thoughts on that?
No, I think that for the most part, I think that's appropriate. I mm-hmm. believe that the code required a reduction in impacts, an overall reduction in impacts related to issuing a major CUP revision. But I could expand further and look that up and get back to you.
Okay, and my question is more on kind of the SEPA lens. But
sure.
Yeah. Okay, does the parties, any closing arguments or anything, or we're at our...
We beat a dead horse.
Here. Okay, yeah, I think I heard anything. So, are there any procedural issues further that we need to address with regard to the SEPA appeal?
No, I think. Well, I think there was a question earlier about leaving the record open.
Yeah, there was a question on that. I was thinking maybe leave the record open for a day or two. I'm just going to wait for the SEPA to conclude to see if there, you know, if there was anything outstanding on that. So I guess what I'll do is maybe leave it open through the CUP. I'm talking about keeping the record open on the CUP part of it, maybe through close of business Monday, in case there's anything further that the public wanted to. Or applicant wanted to provide testimony on. So, but I don't think there's anything further I need with regard to SEPA because the parties have presented both their cases on that. So, okay. So we'll just to be clear for the record, I will keep the record open through close of business on Monday. So if anyone has anything additional materials they wish to submit on the CUP piece of this, they would go to Ms. Walston by close of business, which I believe is 5 p.m. 4 p.m., sorry. So I think that's it. Are there any other procedural questions? Anything else we need to address today?
I don't think so.
Okay. We are adjourned. Thank you all.
Thank you.